Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. Hey friends, this is Kurt Frankum, the host of the Leading LDS podcast. I welcome you back. Now, one thing you may not know about me is that I've started to have a regimen of meditation each morning. Well, I don't get to it each morning. I'd like to, but I use this app called Headspace. You may be familiar with it. And I've been doing some like guided meditation and it's been good. I recommend it. And then it's definitely enhanced my spiritual side, but I digress. In this episode, it's just me, you, and the mic. And we're going to talk about a topic that is definitely on the minds of many leaders, especially as they have individuals come in and share specific doubts of the truth claims of the church and what does the leader do, right? Now, the talking points of this episode come from an article I wrote that I sent out through the newsletter. If you're not on the Leading LDS newsletter, you got to be there. You got to sign up for it because you do get additional content that you don't always see on Leading LDS, or you get content sooner before everyone else and you can give me ideas and feedback before I make it public. So go to leadinglds.org and sign up for the newsletter. But let me give you a little background of how this article came to be, why I wrote it, why I sent it out to the newsletter, and why I'm now making this episode the Leading LDS podcast. I had a good friend come to town. She was from out of the country, actually. And I've gotten to know her just through Leading LDS. And that's how we first became acquainted. And we've developed a friendship with her and her husband and her family. And they were coming to Utah. So we decided, well, let's get together. And we never met in person, and so we went out with my family and her family and had a great chat. Now, her sister was also visiting from out of state, and her sister, you know, raised in the church, married in the temple, but in the last few years has had some serious doubts about the church, about some of the truth claims, and it's caused her and her husband to retract themselves from the church, stop attending, and she's really in this spiritual free fall, not knowing where she should go and what she should do. And so during that lunch, she actually brought it up with me. My friend's sister brought it up to me and said, you know, hey, I've heard some of your episodes, your podcasts, and I think you may have an interesting insight on this, but I'm struggling. I'm doubting some things and I've stopped going to church. And, you know, what do you think? And so we had a delightful discussion for about 45 minutes and everybody, it was just remarkable to see her change from just being lost to being concerned to restoring hope and to seeing that energy change throughout our discussion. And it was encouraging and inspiring. And I don't take any credit for it. You know, the Spirit was there. And I hope the words that I spoke that the Spirit took unto her heart and maybe helped her there. But after, my friend was talking and saying, wow, you know, my sister, she went to church on Sunday. She's doing so much better. And you should really put an article together or get on your podcast and just talk, just you, don't bring a guest in, just talk about some of the points that you hit with my sister and how it impacted her and how a leader can maybe do the same thing. And so that's what I did. I put my thoughts down. I wrote this out and wrote this article, sent it out to the newsletter, got some feedback that way, and now publishing it through this podcast. Now, this podcast I'm about to play is actually recorded during a Facebook Live. And so it's going to be a little more raw. And we got some feedback and some comments at the end that I'll share with you. But that's why it seems like I'm talking to somebody or having interaction is because it's Facebook Live. And I'll talk more about that. And before we jump into the content of this article and this podcast episode, I want to encourage all of you to be a core leader with Leading LDS. And what that means is that you either become a monthly or a yearly contributor. And this is on a subscription, automatic subscription level, right? That you donate a dollar, $2 a month, and it contributes every month to do that. Now, and those that do that, we'll have access to additional content, webinars, our library of webinars that we've done, and it'll be well worth it. And I realize some of you have tight budgets. Some of you are maybe more affluent and have more in abundance with resources. Whatever it is, whether you can donate $100 a month, great. If you can donate $1 a month, great. But just contribute. We all need your help. I want this to be a team effort where people from around the world are making the mission of Leading LDS possible by enhancing the ability and capacity of lay leaders across the world. And you have a role in this. You don't have to record the podcast episode. You don't have to contribute an article, but at least contribute a dollar a month for the content that we produce, and I promise you, it'll be well worth it, and you'll be a better leader because of it. So here's me discussing the article I wrote called Being a Leader Comfortable with Doubt, 7 Tips to Help Those You Lead Who Doubt. Today on the Leading Elders podcast, this is just a discussion with me, the microphone, and you. And I'm actually recording this at the same time that I'm doing a Facebook Live. So when you hear this, you can actually go to Leading LDS or go to Facebook, facebook.com/leadingLDS, and see the video recording of this and see my lovely face yakking into the mic as I do this. But we're trying to be more active with doing weekly Facebook Lives, and I've already discuss that with the Facebook Live audience, but nonetheless, join us Saturday mornings as we do Facebook Lives or webinars and be a part of that. But I wanted to discuss an article that I am writing and putting together in the process of getting proofread called Being a Leader Comfortable with Doubt, 7 Tips to Help Those You Lead Who Doubt. And I get various emails from individuals, from leaders who, quite frankly, they would admit that they're just quite frankly not comfortable with doubt, right? They get an individual that comes in their office and they don't know what to say. They don't know all the answers. They feel like maybe they should have the answers. And really, they sort of judge themselves as a leader that, man, I can't help this person who comes in. Or they try other tactics that just make the situation even worse, right? And so if you go to Facebook, the Facebook page and watch the video, I sort of talk about in detail why this article came to be. But it came from a conversation I had with an individual who was doubting and approached me seeking sincere guidance and understanding. Now, it's important, you know, it's easy for a lay leader to sort of put this idea of individuals doubting out of sight, out of mind, right? It's comfortable to go to church, to be in Sunday school class, and sort of be on the understanding that, you know what, all of us we're all believers, right? We're all in the same boat, and nobody really doubts here. And if you doubt, you know, those people, you know, we'll pray for them. And of course, but when we're here in Sunday school, we're going to say decisive truths, and it's going to be black and white, because we're here to testify of the gospel, which I completely understand. And believe me, I was that bishop. But I think we overestimate the reality that there are individuals sitting in our sacrament meetings, in our Sunday school classes, in our priesthood meetings, Relief Society meetings, and they sincerely doubt. Now, these aren't individuals who are sinning or want to sin. And if there's anything you can get from this episode, we have got to get away from this concept that if an individual doubts, they must be sinning. There must be some desire deep down that they just need an excuse to break covenants, to get away from it all. And I get it. There are situations where that's the case. Absolutely. But we really have to get away from that, because that doesn't help in anybody's progress. Because there are individuals who sincerely, whether they've come across historical concerns, whether they are just baffled by, you know, recent guidance or contemporary revelation that's come from prophets, seers, and revelators, that they're just, man, I don't know how to reconcile all that with what I feel to be right, right? And so we have to come to the reality and know that, and be comfortable that, you know, we have people show up here every Sunday and they have legitimate doubts, and they are legitimate. And myself, I'm a very black and white believer, and, you know, I've gained a testimony through the traditional methods, and I don't think the development of my testimony would surprise any specific individual who has a background in the LDS church, right? But I think it's important for us to just, first, before we get into these concepts, to realize that if you think the majority of members showing up on Sunday have a rock solid, black and white, every fiber of my being testimony, we really have to reassess that. And we have to ask ourselves, how are our meetings influencing them and making them feel? And I've actually written an article on this. I mean, maybe jumping ahead a little bit, but I've written an article of this about how did I title that? So why your without a shadow of a doubt testimony is hurting your leadership. And again, I'm not disparaging from myself. I could use that worn out cliche myself of there are many moments in my life where I feel like I believe without a shadow of a doubt. The problem comes is when we have fast and testimony meetings and every person standing up is sort of saying that same thing. And that person who has legitimate concerns and starting to doubt is sitting there thinking, these aren't my people. They don't understand me. I don't have a place here. And then they retract themselves, right? So definitely check out that article. But it's important for us as leaders to put ourselves in the shoes of those that maybe doubt and say, what is it about the Sunday school class that maybe makes them uncomfortable, right? And I'm not saying we have to diminish or water down testimonies and tell people, oh, no, you can't testify strongly, but really just there's some things that we can do to maybe help them feel more comfortable. But let's just go into these points. Let's imagine an individual comes to a bishop, and that's kind of the default scenario that we think of. An individual comes into the bishop's office, shares some concerns. Now, again, hopefully that bishop is approachable enough to that person actually set that appointment. My fear is most individuals, because they feel like they feel alienated in our sacrament meetings and our Sunday school classes, they feel like there's not a place for me. They don't understand me. Therefore, I'm not going to talk to the bishop. But if they do, wonderful. This is an opportunity to talk about it, right? And so when an individual comes in, the number one, if you do anything, if there's one thing you do in that interaction, it is validate, 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 and then validate some more. And what I mean by that is, as an individual comes in, they may share the most preposterous, out of this world concern of doubt involving aliens or creatures from another dimension, whatever it is that has caused them to doubt. Now, obviously, it's not going to be that extreme. But whatever it is, it's important that you validate that a normal human being may begin to question their faith because of a historical concern, because of a social concern, because of whatever it is. Again, you don't need to condone it or agree with it and say, oh yeah, I can totally see how that's the case. But you need to recognize and validate that it is possible for a normal human being to have that concern, to have that doubt, right? Individuals, and these are all in the church essays they've put out, right? Which I'll talk about later. The fact that an individual may come across that polygamy maybe was a little more messy than they had first realized, or that the fact that Joseph Smith translated a lot of the Book of Mormon with just the seer stone doesn't go in accordance with what they learned in primary, right? And so these are concerns that have caused doubt. And so in that moment, you have to validate it. You have to say, and again, you're not saying, yeah, that is absolutely what I believe, but you say, I can see how a normal individual may start to have some concerns by learning that new information. And a big part of validation isn't necessarily saying they're right or wrong, but a big part of validation is identifying the feelings that they may feel in that moment, right? By saying, you know, I would imagine, phrase you could start with, I can imagine that that somebody who's grown up in this church that's had a lifelong, you know, black and white testimony, learning this information, I can understand it would make you feel confused in a free fall. Like you don't really know what's true and what's right and what's wrong, right? And just don't, again, you're not agreeing with them, but you're validating the feelings that they may be feeling. And what this does by validating is in that moment, they suddenly feel like, oh, maybe I'm not going crazy. Maybe I am just a human being having a faith development process, an experience. Maybe I'm not going crazy. And most importantly, my bishop doesn't think I'm going crazy either, because he's validated how I feel. So if anything, validate, validate, validate. That's the best thing a leader can do in those moments. It's these moments when we feel like, oh, well, if we have this flawed thinking of, oh, well, they must be sinning somewhere. So my role in this interaction is to identify where they're sinning that's causing doubt. We've got to get rid of that perception. And again, I realize it happens, but it's definitely not the norm. Okay, so validate, validate, validate. The next thing to consider when interacting with somebody, you know, say in a bishop's office of somebody who's really in a stage of doubt, is to offer a new framework. You know, when an individual experiences a faith crisis, they feel like they are in a spiritual free fall. What they thought was solid is now liquid. What they thought was liquid is now solid, right? They're just in the spiritual free fall and they don't know what to grasp onto, because what they grasped onto before is now what they're currently doubting, right? And so they begin to question concepts in life that have never been questioned before, especially those concepts based on faith. They move from a life of certainty to a life of constant questions. They destroy hope in themselves and in the gospel, and this brings a lot of anxiety to the surface, right? One of the best ways a leader can help others to establish a foundation of hope is to give the individual a framework in which to start reconstructing their faith. Up until now, most with an LDS background have had a black and white framework to define their faith. So this is interesting because, again, it's not a problem that their testimony is broken, but it's a problem of their framework is broken. Their framework of belief is broken. And your role as the leader isn't necessarily to cram in their skull these beliefs and say, no, 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 this is true. This is true. This is true. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. You need to step back and help them discover a new framework that would help them develop a deeper sense of the gospel and discover deeper truth, right? And so the framework that we sort of learn in primary, which is a valid framework, has worked for me, is you got a question, you pray about it, you get an answer, and you move forward, right? Well, now they've done that, and now they have this new information or new concerns that has caused that to not work. And so you need to help them establish a new framework. So I've talked about James Fowler's six stages of faith on the Leading LDS podcast before. Now, James Fowler, and here's the thing, people listening, especially if you're an intellectual, you've learned about, you're going to hate my explanation of this because I'm not an intellectual. I haven't like read his book in depth, every word, but I've understand the basics of his six stages of faith. And this is a fantastic framework to introduce to somebody because it allows them to hold on to something and anchor in once again to stop this free fall. Okay, now let me just go through. Now, James Fowler wasn't LDS. He was Christian, from what I understand, and a psychologist, I believe. Anyways, professor. Anyway, so he talks about these six stages. Let me just explain to them, because right now, the typical traditional LDS believing framework is black and white. It's either all true or it's not. Joseph Smith was either a prophet or he was not, right? And that can sometimes translate to Joseph Smith was either perfect or he wasn't a prophet. The church is established perfectly or it's not the church, right? And that's where it gets muddy and people start to go into this free fall. So let me just quickly go through these six stages. And this is a whole nother episode and one that I probably need to focus in and give more information in detail. So stage one, these are sort of linear stages. So stage one is this is like the nursery stage, right? Sunday in nursery is you go into this room, you play with toys, and as a two-year-old, you learn lessons like, I'm thankful for my nose, and Heavenly Father loves me, right? These are very superficial beliefs, the foundation of belief, okay? Stage two is when we kind of move on to primary, and we start singing songs like, follow the prophet, follow the prophet, follow the prophet, he knows the way, right? Now, if we sang that every week in priesthood meeting and we had a guest come and we were sitting there like in this monotone, like that would be weird, right? It's a fun song and lots of verses, but that's stage two where it's just like a very simple black and white of, yes, I do believe, and it's very black and white, right? But it's more on an elementary level. Stage three is the stage that I would say majority of LDS members, especially myself, are in this stage. And this is a very black and white thinking. So this is the true and living church restored by God in the most perfect way possible, which I believe, right? Now, there may be some more nuance there. Was it established in the most perfect way possible? Well, you know, looking at the restoration, there are some sticky moments, right? To me, that doesn't invalidate the fact that it was the restored gospel. This is typical of what we see in the church, very black and white. Now, the person who is doubting is shifting from stage three to stage four. And that is where the free fall happens, because the stage four is something like an example, the Book of Mormon was mainly translated by a seer stone. Is this true? I'm going to have to figure out a new way of structuring my faith in order to fully benefit from what the gospel offers. So in stage three, the gospel and every principle fits perfectly into this cute little box. And then we discover some more information. We have to then restructure that box. And then suddenly everything's not fitting in that box very well. There's a lot of nuance, right? And that's what stage four looks like. And that's where that individual is. Okay. Now, stage five and six, not going to spend a lot of time on, but stage five and six is pretty much being able to move past that and restructure your faith in a way that you can be a little more confident in your faith and in the principles and the truth claims and those things, right? But what's important to focus on for a leader to focus on is this transition between stage three and stage four. because that's where the free fall happens. And typically what happens is that individual who's now in stage four has nothing to grasp onto. Their framework is broken. They walk into a bishop's office. And what does that bishop do? Is he says, well, we need to get you back to stage three. So what do we need to do to push you back to the stage of black and white thinking, right? And the reality is with this, there's no going back. There's no reversal on this framework. But what we need to focus on is that instead of saying you are in a faith crisis, better to say you are in a faith transition. And this transition is completely normal. Now, it's not required that everybody, again, our goal isn't to become, you know, stage five, stage six. Like myself, I'm a very stage three believer. And that doesn't mean I should be striving to become a stage four believer, right? But what people, it just naturally happens, they move into stage four, and then that bishop says, whoa, let's get you back to stage three. And that's manifested by them saying like, oh, no, stop reading those things. And no, that they're probably lying. And what's that that's doing is you can't pull them back to stage three, so they feel more alienated. They're like, oh, maybe this was a mistake to come in and talk with my bishop and those things, right? So the point here is the importance of a bishop or a leader understanding Fowler's stages of faith is it gives you an opportunity as a leader to present a new framework. So as I was talking with that individual on our lunch and she was expressing these concerns, I made it a point to say, from my opinion, it is important for you to know that I don't think you ever left the church, right? And hearing that was such a hope builder for her because she never wanted to leave the church. But she thought, well, now that I believe different, I have now left the church. I've now stopped going to church and I have left going to church. But I was very clear with her in saying, you have not left the church. You are going through a faith transition. Now, suddenly they think, wait a minute, there's a structure for this. There's a model that I can hold on to. And that restores hope. Okay. Again, you're not solving their problems. Their doubts aren't going away, but you let them know this is, you validate, right? And then you give them a new framework to hold on to. And then they say, okay, now with this framework, I may be able to develop a plan. I don't have that plan yet, but I may be able to develop that plan. So I encourage you to check out Fowler's Stages of Faith. Even a quick review of the Wikipedia article on this is worth it and better for you, right? So, and there's various stages. I've done an interview with Thomas Wortham McConkie about different frameworks that he's talked about. That might be helpful to read and understand, but encourage you to listen to that. All right. Next tip here is invite them to engage in the gospel. Okay. Now, here's the reality is it is easy and tempting for a bishop, like I've said, to just say, oh, stop reading that stuff. That's anti-stuff. Get away from that stuff. When you're doing that, from their perspective, you may be appearing as if you're trying to keep things covered up and stay away from new knowledge and understanding, right? But instead, invite them to engage in the gospel and at least give equal time, right? And say, you know, if you're reading these things, you know, I'd be leery of it. I may not agree with these individuals, but if you feel like you need to read this stuff, all I ask is that you give equal time, that you are still applying the faith-building models that you knew before of discovering new truths through the scriptures, through personal revelation, pondering, and prayer, and really seek for deeper truth, okay? Now, here's even something more crazy, and I realize most leaders won't agree with me, but I remember as a bishop, several people coming in and sharing doubts with me, and I would take the opportunity and help them step back and congratulate themselves and say, isn't it wonderful that you found a new way to discover deeper truth in your faith, right? Because I have complete faith in the process of self, of personal revelation, of sincerely, just as Moroni said, having a sincere heart and really asking yourself, are these things not true? I believe in that process. And so as a bishop, it removed the responsibility for me of solving their problems right there, but encourage them to trust in that process of going back to the scriptures, of just at least giving equal time, if not more, to reading and pondering over the truths, whether it's about Joseph Smith, whether it's about the Book of Mormon, whether it's about current social issues, whatever it is, that maybe they've discovered a new reason to pray to see if we have a living prophet today, right? All right, the next tip is give no impression of wrongdoing, right? And this can sneak up on you more than you think. You may think that you're not giving any impression of wrongdoing, and it's tough. And again, I would never fault a leader or a bishop of following what they feel like is needed to do. But sometimes we feel like, okay, well, the first step is to get that temper recommend out of your profit or out of your pocket. The first step is to make sure we release you from your calling, right? And I get, like, if they're teaching Sunday school every week and they're up there as doubting Thomas and they're not sure what to say, and, you know, that can be distracting, right? But really, removing these things gives the impression of wrongdoing, like they've done something wrong. They've made a mistake by doubting, and you shouldn't have doubted, right? But realize they're in a process, they're in a new framework, they're progressing forward, and they're in a faith transition, not in a faith crisis. And if we recognize as leaders they're in a faith transition, we may be more patient with that transition rather than just yanking things away. Now, for myself, I've had personal experience when an individual comes in for a temple recommend interview, and if they sincerely, personally cannot answer those questions for them, in order to qualify for that temple recommend, with love, I encourage them, listen, you're in a faith transition. Maybe we're not there yet to renew this, but let's revisit this and see what we can discover, right? So I realize this is like a gray area, and you've got to make the best decision as a leader. And I wouldn't fault anybody for obviously relying on the authority and keys which you have to make those tough decisions. But any way possible, if we can get rid of the impression of any wrongdoing, it would go a long way. And just even recently, I've talked with leaders or individuals who have said, you know, I'm convinced that if people are doubting, it's because they're sinning and there's a reason they want to doubt, right? And I can see in a very stage three black and white state of mind that I can see how you could say that. But we overestimate the damage it can do to that individual by giving them the impression that they're doing something wrong. Next tip is counsel with your ward council. Now, what I mean by that is, like I talked about in the beginning of this, is to step back as a leader and put yourself in the shoes of somebody who may be questioning some of the truth claims of the church. And how is their church experience as opposed to somebody who's all in, right? Now, I'm all in, and so I don't mind going to Sunday school and hearing a truth claim after truth claim and saying, that's what I believe, But how can you, as a ward council, and this is a tough one, and I don't have it spelled out here or have the perfect plan, but what a wonderful opportunity to counsel together as a ward council and say, how can we make the doubter feel more at place here? How can we make sure they keep coming back so that they can have experience with the spirit that is here and find new answers here? So it could be valuable to talk to their ward council and just bring this up. How are we creating a culture that is more inclusive for not only the black and white believer, but also the stage four individual who is going through a faith transition, right? And it's a tough balance, but it's a conversation that every ward council would benefit from. Next tip is become familiar with church resources. Like, seriously, the church has put in so much time and resources and brought some of the brightest minds together to put together the church topic essays, right? And these are topics on polygamy, on translation of the Book of Mormon, on Heavenly Mother, they have so many great articles that clarify our beliefs, right? Blacks in the Priesthood is another one that's there. And so as a leader, I'm still shocked by how I hear of leaders or individuals who are doubting went to their bishop, and the bishop has no clue, nor has he taken the time to even read these articles. We've got to go to LDS.org and immerse ourselves in the content that is there so that when an individual comes in, there's nothing more refreshing for that individual to hear the bishop say, you know what, I've read something about this and let's talk about it, rather than like, oh, well, maybe you should stop reading that stuff, right? Got to educate yourself, and the church has put forward so many fantastic resources to help you. Okay. Now, here's a freebie, and this is one I probably won't put in the article because I didn't know how to articulate it effectively enough for people to misunderstand me, but maybe on this Facebook Live and in this podcast, I can better articulate it on the fly here. We'll see. But when a bishop or a leader is sitting in that one-to-one interaction, it is important for them to think before they testify. Now, don't get me wrong. You need to testify and share your testimony, right? But we get into this mode of like, well, what I need to do to fix this problem is to testify. And it may fix the problem, but it may not. And it may make the problem worse, right? And so as you testify from a point of view of like, I'm going to fix it with these strong spiritual words I'm going to say, but instead, I'm going to restore hope to let them know that I believe And then I've arrived at these conclusions despite these questions and concerns that are out there. I've prayed about them and I've got there. And I think you can do that as you can do that as well. You can get through this transition and it's not a crisis. It's a transition. And them hearing that will be like, okay, so he knows about these things and he isn't in a free fall. So maybe I can get out of this free fall, right? Because a lot of individuals who are doubting come into the office and think, I may send my bishop into a free fall. Maybe he isn't aware of these things and these concerns. And I'd hate to do that because he seems like he has a nice life and family. And I'd hate to send his faith spinning out of control, right? So if they hear that you're considering and validating all their concerns, but you still can stand and believe and testify, that could be great. But if you're just saying like, I want you to know, I believe, and through these words, you're trying to force them to change their mind or dismiss these doubts. Again, it may, and it happens, but we can't approach testifying in those moments just from a standpoint of, I'm going to fix it with my testimony, but rather I'm going to restore hope with my testimony. All right. And then lastly, is we got to trust the grace of Jesus Christ. I have an interview coming up. It's recorded. It's in the queue with Bennett and Becky Borden, who have a remarkable story. Each one of them spent about 20 years out of the church. And I'll let you wait until to hear the details of the story, because it's a phenomenal one, a faith-building one. But they spent 20 years out of the church from various concerns they had and then came back. And it's sometimes, you know, we talk about this concept of sad heaven, that, oh, if they don't stay in the church, it's sad. Of course we want them to stay. But we have to trust in the grace of Jesus Christ that we as leaders were not called to fix it. We were not called to fix it. Christ already fixed it. His grace is sufficient. His grace is sufficient for their transgressions. His grace is sufficient for their trials. And his grace is sufficient for their doubts. And so be encouraging, be motivating, be testifying. But realize that when they walk out of the office, it's in the hands of the Lord. And you're going to love them and encourage them and hope that they come each Sunday and participate in the wonderful ward you have. But some of them may take some time away from the church and it may break your heart. It's unfortunate maybe, but I'm okay with that because I trust in the grace of Jesus Christ to always be reaching out to them. And if I can play a role in that reaching out, I'm going to play a role and I'm going to do my best to constantly be reaching out. But we sometimes try and tie them to the gospel and duct tape them to the gospel. Say, no, you can't leave. No, that's the wrong thing. Then you'll be spinning out of control into transgression and the evil ways of the world. And they may, but the grace of Jesus Christ will always be reaching out to them. And you are not called to fix it. You can try and you can try and participate in that. And Christ may involve you in that, but he fixed it. And so we have to have faith in this process that whatever it is their concern is, however they're doubting, we can allow them to go down the path of sincere exploration and journey, sincere truth finding, and know that if they're sincere, they'll come back. They'll be there. They'll participate in ordinances once again someday. So, all right. I wanted to share with you that we have some comments on Facebook here. Let me, Janelle from Washington. Shout out to Janelle Jacobs Walker, David Frey, my buddy. He says, you should write a special report based on this podcast for church leaders and family members of those who are going through a faith transition. This stuff is gold. Well, I do have an article here and I'm going to publish it hopefully either this week or in the coming weeks. And in this podcast episode, and not that I figured it out, but I have, these are some things just from my life experience, my leadership experience that I found worked for me. And it was so incredible to be involved in that interaction with that person on that lunch and see him totally change. That she went from being discouraged of how am I ever going to go to church again, from being hopeful and excited to go talk with her bishop, excited to involve herself. And this is one thing that another tip I'll add, and maybe I should have. And I think I tried to add it, but again, it was maybe hard to articulate. But I told her, I gave her new purpose. And I said, listen, this is maybe your calling. That you need to attend church so that you can sit by the other person who's thinking, I'm the only person like this, right? And again, you don't want a group that's, you know, the doubting group or the person that's always raising these concerns and being cynical towards everything that's said. But to be a home teacher, a visiting teacher to somebody and say, you know what, I've had similar questions. And I don't got to figure it out, but I'm attending church, I'm going every week, and I'm hopeful that those answers will come and that I'll be able to find new structure. I'll be able to find a new framework that'll help me through this faith transition, right? And that just, I could see the energy ignite in her thinking, I've got a reason to go to church, rather than sit in the back of the room folding my arms and thinking, oh, these people, all their truth claims, right? I had a new purpose that I could serve that other person that was going from stage 3 to stage 4, right? All right, what else we got here? I'm reading these comments. Ryan Gottfriedson, a fantastic contributor to Leading LDS, says, I really like the idea of labeling doubt as part of a faith transition rather than a faith crisis. And I think it's often accurate. I think that can be really helpful for individuals dealing with ambiguity and uncertainty. Another thing that I think would really be helpful is if one of the brethren shared their experience of them going through a faith transition. I would like to think that some of them have. Until that happens, I think faith transitions will seem a bit taboo. I think a stigma that is out there is, since the leaders of the church haven't dealt with a faith transition, something is wrong with those that are going through a faith transition. I completely agree. We by creating this culture of thinking, well, the bishop and everybody in charge and everybody that can stand up there and say, I believe with every fiber of my being, like they've never doubted or had a question, we do unintentionally build this culture of shame, thinking, well, now that you have questioned, you're a different type of member. And this is unfortunate, right? We need to figure out a way to get past that. David DeFord, thanks, buddy. Appreciate your encouragement. Heather says, a friend of mine who was a mission president once said that if we really pay attention to the vision of the tree of life, then we know that some will leave. Yeah, some will leave. And I hesitate before I say, you know, that's okay. To me, it's okay, not because, well, we lose some, we gain some, we lose some, right? It's okay because I know that Christ will always be reaching out to them. Always, 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 no matter what decision they make. And if they stay in this mode of sincerely seeking for truth, they will be brought to and developed and sanctified in the way that they need to do. So any other comments, and we welcome. I hope this is beneficial. We're going to put this out on Leading LDS if you want to watch it later or share it. That'd be great. One way you could help Leading LDS is to share this this discussion. And I'd love your feedback. If you are watching this after the liveness of it, then I'll respond to all the comments and make sure that we keep this discussion going. But look for this article. I'll hopefully publish it this week or in the coming weeks. Lots to do. I'm sitting on a lot of good articles that need to be published. And it's just hard to stay ahead of things. So I appreciate, I'd be also open to any ideas that you have. Maybe I'm seeing things wrong. I'm not claiming to have this figured out. I'm sure there's other tips that you would add, and I'd love to maybe add those before we publish it to the general public. But that's what I'm thinking. So David says, the skill of reframing is so powerful. My big takeaway from the podcast is, how can you reframe this faith transition so that the member is validated and feels this is just part of their spiritual journey to truth? This is, amen, brother. Yeah, I think you're picking up what I'm putting down here, that we have to remove the crisis part of it and help them realize, yes, you do have questions. Yes, you do have doubt, but no, you are not free falling. You're not out of control. There is still truth out there. You can still be discovered. And a lot of the older methods of finding that truth are still valid. So yeah, reframing, giving them a framework and say, here, hold on to this. Cause right now they're like, I don't know what to hold on to. And then having a leader say, here, hold on to this, is going to be powerful. So, all right, guys, I think I'm going to wrap it up there, and we'll publish this podcast as well so that you can share and keep it going. But if you have any ideas or thoughts or future webinars you'd like to see done at Leading LDS, I'd love to consider them involved, and we're going to have some guests that can maybe speak more to some of these principles and help us be better leaders, because our mission at Leading LDS is to enhance the ability and capacity of lay leaders in the context of the LDS church, and I'm committed. We're going to do this, and we're going to do it well. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. When the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.